From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Many high-end restaurants covet wild Alaska seafood, but continued difficulty in retaining workers after the pandemic has forced fine dining venues to lower the number of tables they now serve. As a result, some seafood processors say that's reducing the profit they've relied on. KDLG's Christina McDermott has the story.
6-7, an upscale restaurant located in Seattle's historic Edgewater Hotel, serves Northwest cuisine with a focus on fresh seafood. They source some of that from Alaska's fisheries, which provide more than half of the country's wild-caught seafood. The restaurant is open 7 days a week, but the hotel's general manager, Ian McClendon, says he's noticed that other fine dining spots are operating for fewer hours.
I would say several high-end restaurants that used to be open 7 days a week down here in the waterfront are not open their full time.
As restaurants reopened to in-person dining after pandemic closures, they struggled with staffing shortages, according to the National Restaurant Association. The association says that at the start of this year, 80% of restaurant operators said they had a hard time filling open positions. Seafood processor Ocean Beauty Icicles former CEO Mark Palmer says that restaurant staffing challenge has affected the amount of seafood they purchase. In a recent meeting hosted by the United Fishermen of Alaska, Palmer said that restaurants are operating with a smaller wait staff, selling fewer dishes for higher prices.
Some of them have identified a new business model that doesn't move more pounds of product, it moves less. And they're just as profitable.
Palmer said that many processors have traditionally depended on the sales to fine dining restaurants like 6-7 to help turn a profit. But even as processors get premium prices for Alaska seafood, the lower volume being purchased from restaurants would mean less pounds sold. University of Alaska Emeritus Professor of Economics Gunnar Knapp has studied fisheries for decades. He says restaurants have adapted to having fewer workers by catering to this smaller clientele. And he says grocery and fish markets are also changing what and how much they buy to adjust to having fewer workers.
On the retail side, they're trying to do less that involves labor, okay? And this can affect the mix of products they want to buy and have to stock and so on.
These changes, Knapp says, come as many processors are contending with a shifting international market. That means paying to hold large quantities of some products, even as sectors face shortages.
The longer that they have to hold those fish, the higher their storage costs, but also the higher their interest costs from the borrowing that they're going to have to do.
Knapp says in the future, retailers are likely to return to buying larger quantities of available fish like sockeye salmon.
Because eventually some stores, you know, retail stores will say, hey, all those other stores are keeping their prices high. We'll buy, say, sockeye salmon and, offer consumers this cheaper price that the other stores aren't passing along. And eventually then they have to, the other stores have to price match and then prices get into adjustment.
And restaurant job openings are down from last year's peak. But a return to normal labor levels might not be the whole picture. The Edgewater Hotel's general manager, Ian McClendon, says that even with a full restaurant, they're buying less from Alaska because of continuing supply line constraints and, in some instances, like with crab, a lack of availability.
We've never had this many seafood vendors that we've had in the past. So we're having to find more people, it's harder for us to find product than it used to be before the pandemic.
Some processors, such as Palmer, have called for legislative change to help address some of the challenges the industry is facing. That could include involving the USDA or providing low-interest financing solutions. For now, processors and their clients will have to continue to grapple with the challenges of labor shortages and a fluctuating market. In Dillingham, I'm Christina McDermott.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund. In recognition of the fishing industry, which provides more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
Unalaska leaders are pushing back against a proposed petition to eliminate Chinook bycatch in the Bering Sea Alaska pollock fishery. Tribal organizations submitting the petition represent nearly 100 tribes and communities in western Alaska. They're asking to completely eliminate any Chinook bycatch from the pollock trawl fishery for 180 days. Unalaska Mayor Vince Tuchyukov said in a letter that a zero cap would, quote, effectively shut down the entire pollock fishery of the Bering Sea and create a, quote, dire situation for Unalaska. Bering Sea pollock is the largest fishery in the nation and Unalaska's main economic driver. Tuchyukov says closing the pollock fishery, which would be the logical result of imposing this restriction, would gut the local economy and reduce city revenues by 20%. A similar petition was denied in 2022. The tribes calling for action say the salmon runs in western Alaska have worsened in the ensuing years and that YK villages are experiencing a, quote, cultural emergency. Many in western Alaska have rung alarm bells over dismal salmon returns in recent years. Chum salmon has taken the spotlight recently. Blame often falls on Bering Sea trawlers and intercept fisheries, like the Area M salmon fishery in the eastern Aleutians, although experts agree the real culprit for declining salmon returns is climate change. The Bering Sea pollock fishery already has bycatch limits, and last year's Chinook bycatch fell well below those numbers, but those demanding tighter regulations say the current limits are unsatisfactory. The North Pacific Fishery Management Council meets this week in Seattle, where they will discuss the proposed limits. And thanks to KUCB's Theo Greenlee for that reporting.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The Alaska House of Representatives Fisheries Special Committee met on February 6th. Among the reports they heard was an update from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game on Alaska's salmon hatcheries. This update comes on the heels of a report published in the journal Fisheries Management and Ecology, entitled A Global Synthesis of Peer-Reviewed Research on the Effects of Hatchery Salmonids on Wild Salmonids. That study compiled information from 206 publications between 1970 and 2021. Their conclusion, quote, our review suggests hatcheries commonly have adverse impacts on wild salmonids in freshwater and marine environments, close quote. At issue is salmon competition at sea. The idea is that hatchery salmon, especially pink salmon, compete with wild salmon at sea to the detriment of wild stocks. Here's Dr. Katie Howard, lead scientist for the Department of Fish and Game's Salmon Ocean Ecology Program, addressing the committee.
So salmon competition at sea is a topic where there really isn't clear-cut scientific advice available. If you asked three different scientists about this topic, you might get three really different perspectives. There are many opinions about some salmon competition at sea from individual scientists, but right now there isn't an agreed upon opinion of the scientific community at large. And there are really diverse perspectives in the scientific literature. Some very bold statements are being made on either side of the issue, with gray area in between. And so I pulled out on this slide a few quotes from the scientific literature just to give you an example of how polarized the debate is. So on this one side, we see statements that pink salmon in particular are responsible for a resource vacuum that has a destabilizing effect on the ecosystem. But on the other side, these kinds of statements are being seen as fantasies or absurd.
Scientists who argue that hatchery pinks could compete with and harm wild stocks are bolstered by indirect data comparing the alternating strong and weak pink salmon runs that occur in odd and even years. Other species seem to decline in population when pink salmon are booming. Generally, this kind of causation from correlation conclusion is frowned upon in science, but as Dr. Howard explains,
they argue that direct assessments or experimental studies in large marine ecosystems are incredibly difficult, and so indirect evidence is necessary and can be considered sufficient because we do see very similar patterns consistently across multiple situations. These perspectives largely focus only on salmon as a potential competitor. In these perspectives, there is often a focus on pink salmon, with the view that this biannual two-year life cycle of pink salmon provides a natural experiment that can be leveraged for analysis. Now, on the other side, the other's perspective, for those who are not convinced that this suite of research successfully demonstrates that observed patterns in Pacific salmon is caused by competition at sea between salmon species, they point to this reliance on indirect evidence as being a weakness. And they point out that studies that encounter a lack of relationship and they're often ignored by researchers or not even published. And scientific literature, we call this confirmation bias. And it's known to exist throughout all research. So the people with this perspective consider the focus only upon competition between salmon species as short-sighted, and it ignores the role of other non-salmon competitors in the marine ecosystems. They point out that while salmon are important to humans, their importance as predators in the marine ecosystem is relatively small when you consider other species with similar diets, such as pollock, cod, and herring. They argue that not enough has been done to rule out alternative explanations for the correlations that are observed. For example, biannual patterns are also known to occur for some important squid species, but nobody has looked at squid species as a potential cause for biannual changes.
Overall, ADF&G staff suggested that it would be premature to attempt to help wild stocks by curtailing hatchery production.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.